guys.
You are now listening to Beyond the Gavel with Judge Ron Rengel, educating the public and expanding mindsets. Subscribe on our website, beyondthegavelpodcast.com, or your favorite podcast platform for more of the latest podcast episodes and updates.
Welcome to Beyond the Gavel with Judge Ron Rengel. I'm your host. This is our very first episode in 2023. And guess who I have with me today? Mary Ross.
Hello.
Thank you for being here, Mary.
I am happy to be here. I'm glad you finally asked. I've been waiting for you to ask me to be a guest on this wonderful podcast, and here I am.
Have you heard about the podcast? Have you heard about what's happening with it?
I've heard a little bit about it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Good things.
Good things.
Well, you're a court reporter.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, I take a verbatim record of all the proceedings in court, and when needed for appellate purposes or any other purposes, I transcribe that into the written form and certify it to be used for whatever.
Who is Mary Ross?
Yeah, I've been here in San Antonio for 3.5 years. I started my court reporting career in Abilene. I was a freelancer there for several years and then became an official with a district court in 2001. And have been working strictly in district courts ever since then.
Why court reporting?
Well, you know, I had never heard of it. I actually have an interesting story. I was a teen mom. I found myself pregnant at 16 years old in high school. And I dropped out with the intention of going back the next year. It was my senior year. And I went back the next year and dropped out again. So I'm a two-time high school dropout. Uh-huh. I ended up getting my GED and was just working at a restaurant. Had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to go to college, but no one in my family had ever been to college. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how I was going to do that with a kid. And someone I was working with just suggested, what about court reporting? And I'd never heard of it. I was living in Breckenridge at the time. The school in Abilene was an hour drive. My mom took me to check it out, and I signed up that day.
What skills do you think are required to be good at court reporting?
It's a very difficult skill to attain. You know, we do have a high dropout rate in the schools because it is a very technical, difficult skill. Some would think, you know, I'm a great typist, so yeah, I'm going to be a great court reporter. That really has nothing to do with it. I would akin it more to playing a piano than typing on a typewriter. But I think good English skills are important, good listening skills, paying attention, which I don't know, after you do it for so many years, you kind of learn to listen without paying attention. Don't ask me how, but somehow that happens. But
you got to be patient.
I think, yes, it is a very high stress job. But I think the number one, like English, uh-huh. You know, command of the English language, because we have to punctuate the way people speak, and not many people speak in complete sentences. And, you know, I mean, if you've ever read a transcript, if you read your own words, you're like, I don't talk like that. Well, yes, you do, sir.
In your opinion, what is a good definition of an excellent court reporter?
You know, I think an excellent court reporter is one who can produce their work, good quality work, timely. You know, I mean, that's a good court reporter, but an excellent court reporter to me is someone who goes above that, and you have a good working relationship with everybody.
Those are important qualities. I expected you to say a good court reporter is the one that brings tacos.
Well, that's what you say, Judge.
Uh-huh. And you did a great job this morning.
I did.
Yeah, because we didn't have a lunch. Did you have lunch today?
I did not have lunch today.
No, I didn't either. So basically, part of what you have to do requires you to not to have those typical 8 to 5, 9 to 5 hours, right?
Right. Yeah. We often work through lunch.
And then you also work past lunch. Sometimes you work on a weekend, right?
A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, our job is not strictly in the courtroom. The bulk of our job, especially in a busy trial court, it has a lot of appeals. The bulk of our job is outside of court. You know, we're having to produce those records, and that doesn't happen at the push of a button like some people think.
Yeah. So when you're in court, you're making records, but at some point you got to figure out, how do I go over this? How do I make sure I listen to this? Make sure that everything is in proper form.
Right.
When do you have an opportunity to do that?
So that's after hours and on weekends. And, you know, if it gets too bad, if you get too far behind, you know, sometimes you have to hire help, somebody to help you. And that comes out of our pocket. But, you know, that's just part of it.
So we're still talking about you personally, right?
Okay.
How did COVID affect your life?
You know, I mean, like everybody, for a little while, I was lonely. You know, I'm here in San Antonio without any family. And so, you know, yeah. I followed all the rules and stayed in my little apartment. And I was really wanting a hug from someone at some point. But then COVID came along, you know, it allowed me to get caught up on work.
Right.
Because, you know, we weren't doing trials. And
well, you said you moved here 3.5 years ago.
Yes.
And you moved here for this job.
I did.
And you applied and you came in and we loved you. We loved you from the moment that we met you, Trish and I.
Yeah.
Who works in the court with me. So we offered you the job. You came down here and COVID hit. How much?
Yeah. I started here in, I think, July of 2019 and COVID hit in March of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I hadn't been here that long. And, you know, we've all figured that out together, the Zoom court. And
yeah,
and it was difficult at first and it was awkward. And but I think we got it going pretty well and got into a good rhythm.
How was your job as a court reporter affected by COVID? How did the profession change for you?
It took some adjusting going to Zoom. You know, it's really hard. You know, especially with the interference and people talking over each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to interrupt and say, you know, in person, if I don't get something, I'm going to say, excuse me, can you repeat that? You know, and on Zoom, it's hard. I'm muted. I've got to take my hands off the machine and reach up and press something to unmute myself and ask. And if there's the delay. And so that part changed. That was hard to get used to.
Right.
I'm definitely glad to be back in person.
Well, we got to give some background, right? We got to talk about what happened during COVID, right? So you know that I was the local administrative judge.
Yes.
In San Antonio.
Oh, yes. You were very busy.
Yes. And so I had to come up with rules and communicate with people as it relates to how we were going to handle in-person hearings. And one of the very first things I had to do was stop in-person jury trials. During COVID, which happened in March 2020, over almost 3 years ago.
Right.
So stopping in-person jury trials, how did that affect your work?
Well, it slowed down. I mean, we weren't doing any trials. And so we're just taking Zoom hearings and was definitely all caught up. I didn't have anything to work on.
Right.
It got a little boring, honestly.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. That's kind of interesting. And just so everybody knows, we haven't talked about anything. So, I mean, a part of how you get paid as a court reporter, and we'll get into that, right? Yes. But a part of how you get paid is you do records.
Absolutely.
How does that work?
So, you know, when there's an appeal and we have to prepare a record, we charge for those records. That's not part of our salary.
You charge per page.
We charge per page. And, you know, and we also pay for our own equipment, our software, our licenses. You know, we have a lot of expenses that are involved in that, you know, and it's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my steno machine is over $5,000. And when you're in a busy trial court and you're having steady records and all of a sudden it comes to a screeching halt, you know, you never want to depend on that income. But when it's always kind of there and then it comes to a screeching halt, that's
yeah.
a little bit of a took some adjusting.
How can you not depend on that income, right? It's like anybody else. So let's say that somebody just got done with court reporting school and they came and they applied and I said, yes, I'm going to hire you to work in this court. What are like the costs associated with getting started? I mean, people don't understand when they look at how much court reporters get paid,
sure.
how much money it costs to be in that profession.
Sure.
Right?
It is costly.
And then apart from equipment and technology, you have to do seminars.
Yeah, we have to do continuing education every 2 years. We have to get our credits. And
do you purposefully go to the ones that are out of town? Because the county pays for that, right? No. You're shaking
I've been told no, not here in Bexar County.
Uh-huh.
My previous counties always did. And so, yes, I would always go to the big conventions.
So
but
how
since
does,
I started here, I haven't.
How does it pay in Bexar County compared to other counties?
You know, we just recently been raised.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, our salary for, you know, other counties our size, it might be a little under, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's getting there. And the page rate just recently got boosted back to, you know, up to where it should be. And thank you, because I know that you had a big part in that.
Yes.
And it does help a lot, because we do spend a lot of time preparing those records, and it's hard on our bodies too.
Yes, it is. And we're talking about pay raises and per page, we actually have a shortage of court reporters, right?
Yes.
I was reading somewhere that for every 1,000 court reporters in the country that retire or leave the profession, only like 1/5 are coming into the profession. So every year it's getting harder and harder to find good court reporters.
It is. It's scary. I mean, I'm eligible to retire in 2 years. I know you don't want me to.
No, let's not talk.
I'm not sure when that's going to happen.
Yeah,
but no, not yeah, I mean, we, you know, as a machine shorthand court reporter, which is what I am, uh-huh. You know, there are other methods. There's the old school written shorthand, you know.
I've seen those.
Yeah. And there's the voice writers with the mask. I'm not sure the technical term for it.
That's like a new thing, right? That's called voice recording.
It's been around for a long time, mm-hmm. but it's becoming more and more prominent, I think, because the steno, I don't know, it's harder to get out of school. But the steno machine reporters, I mean, it really is the gold star of capturing the record.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I, you know, we do real time for you, and you depend on that real time.
Yes.
I know you do.
Yes, I do.
You know?
Why is that the gold star?
I think it's just, it is the best method of capturing the record.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the voice writing works, so I can't tell you, but I know that.
Yeah.
They can't do what I do.
Well, let's explain when you say I depend on it, right? Because mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah.
Without real time, I don't have the ability to really multitask and listen and watch and feel and do all those other things, which I think are important in the courtroom. And so I read it because I want to know what the appellate courts are looking at
at
the same time.
Right.
Because what we see in the courtroom is not always what reflects on the record.
Absolutely. The record, it really is funny how different it looks on paper than the way it's spoken,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it does, the paper doesn't capture the nuances that you're hearing, but you do depend on the real time. And if there's an objection, you're going to look and see what exactly the question was that was objected to so that you can rule on it appropriately.
Right. One time I was in a jury trial, I was a defense attorney, and the question is, did this elderly lady know who my client was? Was he the guy that was committing this robbery? And so the prosecutor asked her, do you recognize the guy in the courtroom? What she said was, gave a super long pause and sort of questioning said, that looks like him. And it was very obvious that she wasn't sure that that was the guy that she had seen at the scene. So I got up and I said, excuse me, ma'am, did you say that looks like him? And she said, it looks like him, and shrugged, right? So I was thinking, I got built an error here. It's very clear she doesn't recognize my client. She picked out my client because he was dressed a certain way sitting next to me. When the record came out, I was so disappointed because it looked like she just flat out said, that looks like him. Yes, that's him.
Right.
And so the record cannot capture things like inflection. Right?
Right.
Facial expressions, the feel in the courtroom. It doesn't capture all the human things that we use. Something like 90%+ of our communication is nonverbal.
Right.
How are you able to extract yourself from communicating in that way and getting that stuff in and writing only what you hear?
Well, I mean, it's just, it just comes naturally, you know, when you've been doing it so long, but because we're capturing the spoken word. You know, we're not creating some playwright with all the scenes in it.
Uh-huh.
We're making a record of the spoken word.
Well, you know, Charles Dickens was a court reporter. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Yeah. He started when he was 16, I think. And that's what got him into the practice of law.
Yeah.
Or as a clerk, you know, at least understanding what the law was. And, you know, I'm a big Charles Dickens fan. So, you know, I love court reporters if he was a court reporter. So you talked about doing it for a long time. How long have you been doing it?
Well, I was certified in 1992, uh-huh. So 30 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things that court reporters can do, right?
Right.
What are the different kind of jobs that you could pursue?
Well, I mean, it's not just courtroom stuff, you know, so There's depositions. There's
which you don't have on criminal cases.
Not always. Every once in a while, you can have one. That's very rare.
That's true.
You know, things like workers' comp hearings, or sometimes I've done school board meetings where they're going to go into an executive session and try to fire someone, and so they'll want a court reporter. You know, the lawyer will want a court reporter there. You know, there's public utility commission hearings. You know, those kind of things. But outside of that, there's closed captioning, you know, on your TV.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you've got a court reporter doing that. Hopefully. Sometimes you can tell when it's not.
Uh-huh.
You can just tell when it's voice recognition, versus a court reporter.
I agree. I do agree with that.
And, also like the deaf and hearing impaired, court reporters are utilized for, like, you can go into colleges and universities and, like, be with a student who needs you, and you're right next to them, and you're providing real time to them, taking down what the professors are saying. That way they have everything right in front of them.
All right. With that, let's go ahead and take a break. This is a Q&A break. We have a question. We have several questions, actually. And thank you so much for writing in. For all of you that have gone on the website and have signed in and have submitted questions, it means so much to me and so much to us here at Beyond the Gavel. This particular question reads as follows. What makes a court record valid? How do we know what was transcribed is valid?
Well, you know, as a court reporter, as a certified shorthand reporter, we are certified by the Texas Supreme Court. You know, we had to test, and we have very high qualifications that we have to pass in order to get that. We have one of the hardest tests in the nation, and high standards, I should say, to become. And, you know, when we finish a record, we sign and we certify that everything is accurate to the best of our ability, and that makes it valid.
Is there any type of specialty certifications that maybe a court reporter could have?
Yes, absolutely. There are several. I don't have all of them, but there are state level certifications, and then there are national level certifications. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can be certified as a real time court reporter, which I am. There's like a merit exam that you can pass and get that license. And that's just higher speeds. And so, like, for Texas, I've gotten two legs of that, you know, up to 240 words a minute. Uh-huh. So there's still a 260 word a minute that I need to get if I want to get that certification.
Uh-huh.
So I haven't done that yet, but
how easy is it for a court reporter to somehow or another alter or change what was said on that record?
I mean, I don't.
It's like unheard of, right?
Yeah, that would never happen ever. Mm-hmm. We get accused of it sometimes.
And that's why I bring it up. There was a situation, and I don't recall exactly what the circumstance was. And you weren't here, but this poor substitute court reporter was in here. Again, was accused of changing a record. And in our minds, we think, my God, that's never going to happen, right? Because if that did happen, you're looking at major repercussions.
Absolutely.
True ethical type violations. What would be in your thought process with your experience, what would be the end result if somebody were to do that?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, what would be the punishment for that? I don't know. I mean, I've known of court reporters being put in jail for, not producing a record on time. A judge ordered him to a jail cell to finish a record.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I know the court reporter, I feel like they would definitely lose their license.
Absolutely. And the judge would probably not be a judge for very long either. What happens when court reporters make mistakes? Like, let's say that you produced a record and there was a sentence that was said, and somehow there's a dispute, like, that's not quite what that person said. How do you ensure that that is accurate?
Well, most of us have a an audio backup that we listen to make sure, you know, so that's part of our preparing the record. We're going back through and we're listening to the audio. And
I've seen you do that.
Yeah.
Where you listen over and over.
Yeah. And make sure especially when people start talking on top of each other, sometimes a word can get lost here or there. You say it to jurors. You explain it to jurors all the time. You tell witnesses she can only take one person at a time. And it's true. And sometimes when people are talking on top of each other, I want to, like in the old school days when we used a typewriter, I wish I could type a sentence and then type the answer right on top of it and say, here, you read that. Because that's the way we're hearing it.
Welcome back. I'm here talking to Mary Ross. I'm glad you could join us this afternoon. Yeah. So let's say somebody's out there listening now, mm-hmm. and they're thinking, that sounds cool. I like Mary Ross. I want to do what Mary Ross does. How do you become a court reporter?
Yeah, you go. So right now we have a program. Our national association has a program called the A to Z program. And it's an introductory. It's free. It's an introductory. I think it's like 6-week course. Mm-hmm. And it's to kind of introduce you to court reporting and see if it's something you're interested in. You get a machine and you get instruction and you learn how to write. It's not called typing. It's called writing. So you learn how to write on your machine. And you just kind of get a feel if this is something that you would be interested in before you invest the money to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is a wonderful program. And then you find us, if you want to do it, you find a school and you go. And, you know, school, people say, how long does it take? Well, it's different for everybody because it's a skill that you have to attain. And you go along the way and you have to pass this speed level test. And then, you know, you start out at 40 or 60 words a minute and you work your way up to, you know, 225 words a minute, which is what our state exam is to be certified to get your license by the Supreme Court.
If you're really talented and you're really good, what's the general time frame that it takes?
I mean, it took me 2 years, mm-hmm. which was fast at that time. I think that there are students getting out faster now.
Are the machines different?
The machines are the same. We all write differently. It's a shorthand. And so another court reporter is not going to be able to take my notes. And I mean, they can read some of it, but they're not going to be able to read all of it because we develop our own writing briefs and shortcuts that are specific to us that I can read.
That's based on phrases and.
Yes. And things that you say over and over and over and over again. I have a brief for so that when you say it, I can just go boop. And then I wait on you.
So that's why I speak like really fast sometimes. And you can, because I tend to say the same things over and over.
You tend
again.
To, yes. Yeah.
Well, just so you know, I do it on purpose.
I know. I appreciate it.
To make it easier and not just for you, but also for the lawyers, mm-hmm. right? And for the staff. Everybody kind of knows what's coming and brings a sense of certainty. What would be something that a newly graduated, freshly minted court reporter could expect as it relates to pay?
Well, with the shortage that we have, they can walk right into a court
mm-hmm.
and make over $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's good pay.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not especially bad. I was 20, I think, 20 or 21 when I got licensed. I was 20 years old mm-hmm. when I got licensed.
What is the hardest thing about being a court reporter?
It's the physical thing. You know, I deal with neck and shoulder issues. I have for years. And when we get super busy, it gets worse. I'm in the chiropractor's office all the time. I am in the, I'm getting massages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really tough.
Mm-hmm. No. That's the hard part. And you got to stay seated for a long time. That's not
yes.
a healthy thing to do, right?
It's not, you know, and, you know, we have a great relationship. And if I need a break, I don't hesitate to say, hey, judge, can I get a break?
You could ask more often, just
right?
so you know. What is the best part of your job?
You know, sure, we make good money. I love, you know, that's great. But to me, I take great pride in my work. And when I finish a job and I get it filed and I know that I've done a good job. Like I have produced a good record. That is the best feeling in the world to me. Mm-hmm. You know,
accomplishment. Yeah.
Absolutely. This last year, the last couple of years, we had our death penalty case. That was a big case for me. That was the biggest case of my career. I've always wanted to work a death penalty, and I finally got that. But that record was, I think it was 63 volumes, mm-hmm. you know, where most of our murder trials are maybe, 10, 11, 12 volumes. You know, I've had a couple that were 20, but this was a 63 volume case. And that, the feeling that I had when I finished that, I'm almost tearing up. Like it was.
Yeah. And it's in tandem, right? I mean, we do it. It's like a true teamwork kind of, because my experience with that trial was also very special in the sense that now it was a death penalty case.
Right.
And the jury sentences this defendant to death. So we don't want to make light of that, obviously.
Right.
But in terms of the work product that we did, it was just such wonderful teamwork from start to finish in terms of making it professional, making everything work just right. So it's not just the individual accomplishment, but it's the fact that you're working with a group, right? You're
absolutely.
Working with lawyers and with judges and.
Absolutely. You know, and I mean, we all worked together. That trial was a month long plus weeks and weeks of jury selection. And so, you know, all the attorneys and us, the bailiff, you know, the defendant, all of us, we were all there together for a long time.
Yes.
And, yeah.
If you could change, like if you could speak to judges in general, what would be the thing that you would say, please do this differently? Please do this better. What would that be?
So one thing I really appreciate that you do, and not many judges do this, is when you call the case, you have the attorneys announce their names.
Yes.
That doesn't seem like a big deal, but it really is a big deal.
Yes.
You call the case number, you call the defendant's name, and then you have each side announce their name. And, you know, in my smaller counties, that really wasn't that big of a deal because I knew everybody, except now I'm getting record requests from 2014.
Right.
And back then I did it differently. Like now today I would, you know, you learn how to do things along the way. You learn things to make your life easier. Back then, I kept a notepad of every case, and here was the attorney. And on my, and so that was a written, but on my machine, what I was writing was just what was spoken in court. Well, no names were ever pronounced. And so to know who those attorneys are, I would have to go get the notepad out. Now I put the attorneys in my written record,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that I know mm-hmm. if I ever lose a piece of paper,
right?
You know,
that makes sense.
It's little things like that you learn along the way, but yeah, that's a big deal. Making sure that you get announcements.
See, and that's a good point because we work together, right?
Right.
And so for this is my opinion. Other judges may have a different thought process, but for me, one of the most important things that I need to do always is ensure that we have a clean record.
Yes, you always do because you're watching the real time and seeing how it's going to come out and what the appellate courts are going to be reading.
Right.
And that is so appreciated because it helps me, like when everything happens cleanly in court, that makes my job a lot easier.
Right. And you learn in time that not everybody who's going to read the record later has that understanding from experiences of what it is that's actually going on in the courtroom, right?
Right.
So I notice when you're in the courtroom, you wear the headphones.
So I do sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I do that is we have a very busy courtroom and we don't stop everything to do a plea. And so behind me in the jury box, there is a lot of chatter. There's attorneys talking to inmates, their clients, going over plea paperwork. The prosecutors are talking to attorneys. They're giving deals back and forth. There's a lot happening. And instead of saying, can y'all please be quiet? I can't hear. I just put on my noise canceling mm-hmm. headphones and I have a mic at the bench where everybody is. And so that blocks out that noise for me and I can pick up what's at the mic. Now, sometimes it still gets a little loud and I'll give the bailiff a look. And they'll say, quiet, please. You know, mm-hmm. we work as a team. I love our team in this court.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
One time there was a plea bargain that took place, and folks didn't understand why the district attorney's office, it was before this DA's office, why they made the offer that they made. And so the media came in, and I told them, you know, that's like one out of over 100 plus cases that we actually had to do that morning. And that was shocking to people. In their minds, they think that when you're in the courtroom, like on TV, if there's a party before the bench, everybody's silent. Nothing else is going on. It's just the judge focused on that case. Everybody else paying attention to those individuals that are in front of the court. That's not really how it is.
Well, I will say I have worked in one courtroom that was like that.
Where was that?
I'm not going to say.
A small county.
It was a small county. Yes.
So that's the difference, right?
Yes.
This is an urban community.
Yes.
And so our dockets generally deal with lots of people, and the courtroom tends to be full even now, right? We're still under the emergency orders.
Right.
We're still in a pandemic. And so how challenging is that for you as a court reporter?
Well, you know, like I say, I just adapt to it. You know, I want to do whatever I can to make it work for everybody, you know, and if I pitch a fit and say, I can't hear, you know, can y'all please stop this? That's not efficient for our court. And so I found something that works for me and I adapt to it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I don't love wearing the headphones. You'll see me take them off a lot. Every time I can, I'll put them on because that's the way we get our work done.
And I don't know how accurate this is, but I've heard something like 90% of lawyers don't ever step foot in the courtroom in the course of a year. How is it with court reporters? Is it kind of the same in terms of?
Yeah, I do not know the percentage of freelance. What I do know is people who don't work in courts are scared to death to work in courts.
Mm-hmm. How come?
I don't know. I mean, I used to be scared to death. I mean, it's intimidating. It's intimidating to come into court. You know, people, when you see it, when jurors come to court, when witnesses come, they're terrified. Like, the courtroom is an intimidating place. You've got the judge and you've got the bailiffs, and it's very intimidating. And when you're used to doing depositions where there's, you know, a couple of attorneys in the room and a witness and maybe a few more attorneys.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's more laid back, but court is formal and it's scary.
It's always shocking to me that people have that fear, but I get it, right? When I was a new practicing lawyer, especially going up to a sitting judge, especially maybe like on a criminal case, there's always a little more fear. You think of a district court judge, you think maybe they got to be mean. You think of a federal court judge, there's always that little fear as to how they're going to be, right?
Right.
So I get that. So what do you think about this? There is a perception within the county, and I'm not sure it's not just Bexar County, but within counties, the technology is going to replace the business of court reporting.
So I'm glad you asked that.
Uh-huh.
They've been saying that since before I went to school. Before I started school, they said tape recorders are going to take you over, you know, and it scared me. Is this something I want to get into?
Uh-huh.
And then it was, you know, voice recognition is going to take you over. Technology this, technology that. Technology has only enhanced what we can do.
Right.
You know, it truly has. Back in the day, I didn't do real time. You know, it has enhanced what I can do and the work product that I can provide and the timeliness that I can provide it in. You know, right. It's made me a better court reporter.
Uh-huh.
Technology has. I mean, they've kept up with. It's amazing. It will not replace us because no machine can do what a human can do.
Right. What is real time exactly?
So yeah. Real time is where I am taking down the proceedings and it's immediately on your computer screen.
Yes. And I love the fact that you have some technology where it's wireless, right? Because before, right. In the past, I had court reporters that had the real time, but we were connected. And
yes.
So when a court reporter had to go to the front of the room for like a voir dire or a jury selection,
right,
we couldn't connect. And that was always an issue.
Right.
So that's part of what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. The cloud. I mean, it's a gift.
Considering what you do and the amount of time you spend in the courtroom, I cannot go out and do my job in that arena, right? That's just part of what I do.
Right.
I'm not only a judge in the courtroom, but I wear multiple hats.
Yes, you're always busy.
But everything that happens in the courtroom, you're there next to me.
Right.
So you truly are an expert as to what it is that happens in the courtroom, right? And so when people ask you, what is it like? What is it like to work in the courtroom? What is it like to be a reporter? What is it like? What are some of the things that you tell them?
Well, it's not as exciting. Well, it is exciting to me. I love what I do. I still have passion for what I do after 30 years.
I get what you're saying, though, right? It's not TV.
It's not TV.
What's the difference?
I mean, it's slow. It's very slow, you know, especially a trial. It's slow and boring.
Right. So the other day I was talking to another judge. They were in the middle of a murder trial, which sounds really, really big, right? And it's what stuff is made of when you watch TV and movies and read stories about. But they said that they had a medical examiner discussing the manner and means of death for over 2 days. So consider that. Consider that to what happens in movies, right? So is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not what people think. Trials definitely aren't, you know, and then you get into like plea bargains and MTRs, you know, probation revocation stuff. And people, I think people don't understand. Well, you just did a podcast on plea bargaining. So that explained a lot.
That's a plug?
That is a plug.
You got a lot out of that?
I listened to it, Judge.
Awesome. Awesome. That's the least you could do, whether or not you really did or not.
I did listen to it. My dad listened to it too.
Did he?
He's a subscriber now.
Awesome. I appreciate that. So you are a keen observer, somebody who's in the courtroom paying attention, watching, listening, doing all of those great things that a good court reporter does. What would be your perceptions as to how the profession in and of itself handles the business of the criminal justice system in the courtroom?
So when you get online and you read all the comments, and they're so ugly but uninformed is what right. They are. They're uninformed. And they make all these assumptions about what's going on at the courthouse.
Right.
And those of us here, like, we know that's not what's happening.
Right.
There's everything is on the up and up. There's nothing unethical going on.
Right.
You know, I mean, no one would stand for that.
So you basically go through the same things that all of us in the courtroom, judges go through the same issues, right? When a media report comes out and it makes something seem unseemly somehow, you know why they're writing it that way or why they're showing it that way. But we in the courthouse know that we deal with nothing but a bunch of professionals that are ethical, right, that want to see the process flow in a very fair way. Yet every time you see something like the system is broken or corruption or whatever it is that folks write, I've never seen that.
I haven't either.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't either.
Yeah. And you know, you hear about a case on occasion where maybe that kind of allegation has been thrown out. But for whatever reason, it just doesn't seem to be something that anybody that works here has ever seen.
I know. And I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, because correct, there are cases. I've never seen it, and correct, I've worked in a lot of courtrooms.
Right.
I've never felt it. I've never had a suspicion of it. Like, everybody in there is a professional, and they're doing their job.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting perception that you would have as a court reporter, because oftentimes you're not asked your opinion, right? You're not asked, what do you think? You're not asking anybody questions. You're not responding to questions. You are there as the keen observer, the fly on the wall.
Right.
So is there anything interesting that maybe you may have come across that would be a good story, or anything odd, or anything? I think I was telling a story the last podcast regarding, and I think you were the reporter on this case, the aggravated assault at a party where the media reported that it was because a cockroach was in a menudo bowl, right? Were you?
I think I would remember that one. I was not the reporter for that. Thank goodness.
Do you ever have a sense of fear or some trepidation with the individuals that come and kind of stand next to you while you're in court?
So I really haven't. I've only twice do I ever remember that. And, you know, my kids used to always say, Mom, you're around all the bad guys. And I always said, you know, they're not bad guys. They've just made bad choices. I'm a big believer in that. You know, I don't think that these are bad people that are committing crimes. They've just made bad choices. But there have been a couple of times where I really felt I was in the presence of evil. It's kind of scary.
I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
There has been a lot of people think that everybody I deal with somehow or another is a very dangerous person. And we have that perception. But it's only been a handful of times that I've actually faced somebody that I had a sense of, this person really is not a good person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's only happened twice for me.
And when you think about the thousands of people that we come across in a year, that's a very low percentage.
Right.
But if you ask people out in society, if you ask folks in society their perceptions of who goes before the courts, they would have a very different thought process.
Absolutely.
Well, why do you think that is?
You know, I get on Facebook and I read the comments and stuff, and people are very opinionated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people just don't understand our system,
mm-hmm,
and what goes on in the criminal justice system.
That's why we're doing this podcast.
Yeah. I'm glad you're doing it.
Thank you. Well, before we came in here to do this podcast, I told you, I'm going to ask you some personal questions. So let's just go ahead and get into it. So you love karaoke. Is that right?
I've been known to karaoke.
You've been known? Okay. So walking into a place, you have an opportunity to pick a song. What song are you going to pick?
Jolene, 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 Jolene.
That's impressive. You have skills.
That's with a sinus infection.
Uh-huh. And I can
tell how that sounded.
No, I think you did great. You did great. So you like the slower songs?
I guess, yeah.
What's your favorite pizza?
I can tell you what your favorite pizza is.
And that's because I love to express it.
Yes. And you know what? It has become my favorite pizza now.
There you go.
That is pepperoni,
mm-hmm,
mushroom,
mm-hmm,
jalapeno,
mm-hmm,
extra sauce on a thin crust.
You are smart. Mm-hmm. You have good taste in food.
Right.
What's your favorite taco?
Well, are we talking breakfast tacos?
We're talking tacos.
Do y'all know that it took me a very long time after moving to San Antonio to call those breakfast tacos because, uh-huh, they're breakfast burritos where I come from.
Where do you come from?
West Texas.
Which part? West Texas is vast,
yeah,
and huge.
Abilene.
And Abilene. Okay.
Yeah.
So in Abilene, there's no tacos?
I mean, we don't call them breakfast tacos. They're breakfast burritos.
Uh-huh. So tacos are more like the crispy shells.
Yes.
Filled with meat and lettuce and tomato and all that kind,
yes,
of stuff. I got it.
Which I love all the tacos.
Yeah, I do too.
And all the burritos.
What was the biggest adjustment that you had to make going from Abilene to San Antonio? Do you like San Antonio?
I love it.
Why?
This is my city. I really don't know why. You know, it's crazy because we vacationed here. We would come here for spring breaks and, mm-hmm, you know, every year or two we would be here with my kids growing up. We would always come here. I never dreamed of living here.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get to a bigger city after I found myself single. And I tried to get to DFW. I would apply for jobs every time something came open. I just never could get in.
Mm-hmm.
And when I applied in San Antonio, I didn't know a soul here. I didn't have any ins. I just applied and y'all picked my application and invited me for an interview. And, thankfully y'all hired me and I'm happy to be here, but I love San Antonio. I love how festive it is.
Yes.
I the energy here. Everyone's happy.
Happy.
Yeah.
That's a very important quality, I think, in a city. I was telling somebody earlier in court, and we were not on the record. It was during our mental health court earlier today. I asked them, they were talking about happiness, and I asked them, what does happiness look like to you? And she responded, and I told her that I recently read a child that said, happiness to them is the sun shining down on you.
Oh.
And that's kind of what you get in San Antonio, right? You get everyday little experiences that you just kind of, if you don't pay attention, won't mean much. But if you start paying attention, you see how beautiful the city is.
Right.
How wonderful the people are, all the opportunities. We have all the charms of a small community and all the great things that a big city can offer, I think.
Yeah.
And so I'm like you. I'm from a small town, although much smaller than Abilene. But moving to San Antonio, I moved here when I was 20. I didn't want to live anywhere else but San Antonio my entire life. So I'm very fortunate to be here. And after I came here, my entire family followed me. So that tells you something too.
Right? No one's followed me yet.
Not yet. Not yet. You got a ways to go.
I wish my grandkids would follow me. But
Mary, I've enjoyed talking to you today.
I've enjoyed being here.
We work together.
Yes.
A lot.
All day, every day.
Every day. But we don't always have an opportunity to talk about what we do.
Right.
Is there any last words or any thoughts that you have that you think people would be interested in hearing?
Well, I'm going to take a moment and say something about you as a judge, if that's okay. Sure. Not about court reporting, but I've sat with a lot of judges and I've sat in many courtrooms. You do such a great job. You are very compassionate. You speak to every person that comes before you with respect. And I'm not just talking about attorneys. You speak to every defendant, everybody. You show great respect. And I appreciate that as a court reporter, because as a court reporter working for a specific judge, I feel like we're kind of an arm, an extension of you. And if I'm an extension of that, then that makes me very happy. You know, it makes me very proud to work in this court and for you because of the way you treat people.
We're a reflection of each other. Thank you. I've enjoyed this conversation. With that, we'll go ahead and sign out. This is Ron, your host. Please join us in a couple weeks. We'll have another great podcast with another wonderful guest.
You've been listening to Beyond the Gavel with Judge Ron Rangel. Join us in the next 2 weeks where we are educating the public and expanding mindsets. Head to our website, beyondthegavelpodcast.com, or your favorite podcast platform to subscribe to the latest episodes and updates.